Mini episode 660 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Royalty Tours USA, your ultimate resource to traveling in style to attend sporting events. Follow them on the web at royaltytours.blogspot.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everybody. Rick Morris and Kyle Ross, your favorite wrestle talkers in all the world. If you've just been tuning in to catch our wrestling talk, I must preface by saying, remember us? We're the guys that are bringing you our History of the Royal Rumble anthology, albeit kind of starting up over a period of... We took a little bit of time off in between here. It was part three of the Rumble series. This is 4A with 2000 starting today. We left off at 1999, so we've been through a couple of different eras so far.
Yes, it's amazing. We give ourselves a year to get through all these Royal Rumbles in anticipation for the 2016 Rumble and leave, well, over half of them for the last month or so.
I don't think we're going to make that, but I'll tell you what, if we can
now that you've called me out, we're going to find a way to do this.
Okay.
Find a way.
Well, the other thing is, if we hold it till, like, say, WrestleMania season, then we could include 2016. So there's that thought.
That's been on my mind.
Okay.
That's been on my way of one of our ways to do this.
Yes.
Air quotes. So, yeah, it's been a while, Ricky.
Yep.
3 years is a long time to be champion. So let's rehash, shall we?
Okay.
Because, you know, realistically, these things are out in the universe. They're not time sensitive.
Right.
Nobody gives a damn, really.
Spoiler alert, it's not going up the day it's being posted.
No. So, you know, when I say nobody gives a damn, I'm sure many people give a damn. But, you know, I don't think there's a ton of people who are just, it's not like we promise these weekly. They're just out there in the internet for people to consume. So
it's a bonus, you ingrates.
Maybe they find this one right after they found 99.
Maybe.
But anyway, I digress, and let's rehash. Mm-hmm. So we started this thing. We went over the history of the Rumble, and a couple things I wanted to bring up. It is very clear, as we are now done with the 1990s, that you are more of an era-dependent person when reviewing these shows and Rumbles.
Totes.
In that you gave very little credence to anything in the mid-90s period.
Can't be bothered with that.
You were very harsh on 94, which I didn't mind. Yep. Ironically, you liked 93, which I hated.
And ironically, Lex Luger and Bret Hart have been repeated guests on this show, and I still hated their Royal Rumble.
Well, at least I guess. My God, it is fair and balanced here, folks.
Yes, it is.
I'm not even spinning. Look. 95, we agreed both sucked.
Right.
Then we got to the Monday Night Wars period, which was part three, right? Correct me if I'm wrong here. You're the one who takes better notes of this stuff than I do. I come up with the ideas and then forget them 5 minutes later. So part three was the Monday Night Wars era. We covered 96 to 99.
Right.
And so much of what we talked about during those shows, those mini episodes, was what the WWF was doing then to counteract WCW. Now, I remember, as far as your era dependence goes, you and I think maybe we have later years, as we get old and run out of things to do, we may go back and retape those 98 and 99 ones, because I think we were so hell-bent on arguing, because I remember before we taped them, we were arguing so much. You're like, you know what, I really like this 98 one, and I don't care what you say. I'm like, dude, you're full of it. And 99, you're like, this is a good one, and I'm like, dude, that's like the worst one. And it like turned into this childish, embarrassing argument. So if you did listen to this, I'll apologize.
It's the best entertainment sometimes, though.
Okay. So you really liked 98, 99.
Right.
Where clearly the company itself had turned a corner. I was a little lukewarm. I think 99's the second worst Rumble ever.
Okay.
98, I was lukewarm on. But another thing I wanted to bring up with you, in addition to your era dependency, as opposed to me, I'm my chemical dependency, you could bring up probably. Is you kept bringing up how I'm such a generous grader with these Rumbles.
Yes.
But so far, you've been more generous, as the only one I've given a real, quote-unquote, high mark to is 92, which I gave the full 5 stars.
We'll have to add up our star ratings here as we're going along and see who's higher. I think you're going to be higher than me.
At the end, because I think as we move into the 2000s now, I think I'm going to be a little kinder, it sounds like.
You're going to be a lot kinder. That era sucks. I can't be bothered with it.
The 2000s suck because let's now speak in part four, shall we?
Everything after, frankly, this segment here, 2000 to 2002, you know, the tail end of when it was good, as all the lapsed fans out there would say. Kind of agree with that. I'll give you the conventional wisdom on that. By the way, too, you know, and you did a good job of setting us up for this era. I always like to preface by saying with everybody, too, if you want an overall thing about the Royal Rumble, how it came to be, substance of it, whatever, Part 1A, 1988, we probably spent 10 or 15 minutes breaking it down on there. We're obviously not going to do that every time. So if you need a refresher course on our thoughts on the Rumble as a whole and what it's been structurally, go back to that.
Okay, so you brought it up, Part 4 here, mm-hmm. which will be divided into Parts A, B, and C, correct?
Yes.
We're covering 2000 to 2002, mm-hmm. and I have titled it From the War to the Game.
Okay.
So why did I title it that? I thought this was one of my more creative taglines, by the way.
Okay.
Don't you think?
Pretty good, yeah.
Okay, I thought it was pretty good. So the war part, obviously, the Monday Night Wars are ending. And when people listen to this part here, the next couple of years, 2000, 2001, 2002, there's three things that I'm going to focus on, like three big talking points.
Mm-hmm.
One is that the Monday Night Wars are essentially ending over. Now,
right.
as we begin in 2000, WCW is still in existence in 2000. Obviously goes out of business in 2001. But, I mean, anyone who lived through that era remembers how awful WCW was in 2000.
Yep.
They really went off a cliff
yep.
right before the 2000 Royal Rumble. So WCW is kind of an afterthought for the WWF during this period.
Right.
The second talking point is this is the rise of Triple H.
Yeah.
For better and worse, mm-hmm. as I have in my notes. So we'll be talking a lot about him because he's featured prominently in all three of these.
Right.
And number three, and if you go all, you talked about how at the very beginning of this, we go over some history of the Rumble. I mentioned how it didn't start this way, but eventually it became the number two show in the company behind Mania.
That's right.
This is the period, 2000 to 2002,
mm-hmm.
where that transition happens, in my opinion. Now, I'm looking at the buy rates, because and the numbers do bear this out. I'm looking at the buy rates for Rumble compared to SummerSlam all time.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a few times, as I look through here, where the Rumble did beat SummerSlam. They actually beat it 95, believe it or not. But then again, SummerSlam 95 was an atrocious program with
yeah.
Mabel headlining. 96, it did better. Actually, a lot better. But in 98, believe it or not, SummerSlam did 2-1 buys over the Rumble.
Okay.
It started even out in 99. 2000, it was even. 01, Rumble will surpass it. And then 02, which we'll get to at the end, obviously, here,
mm-hmm.
is the most bought Royal Rumble of all time. It's 670,000 buys.
Right.
So, and then from here on, from this point on, as I look through, and we're going to obviously talk about these Rumbles way in the future.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 03, 04, not 05, because 05 SummerSlam, Hogan came back.
Okay.
But all these other
I'll
ones.
I'll bet you the same in 06, because 06 was a pretty star-studded SummerSlam.
Yeah, but you know, the Rumble slightly beat it, according to the numbers
Ooh.
I'm looking at. 07 did not, which is interesting. SummerSlam
okay.
07 was terrible. But
anyway. Return of Triple H, return of Ray Ray. Well, I'm just devil's advocate.
Yeah, something else happened a month and a half before that wasn't so hot.
Do.
Yeah. But generally speaking, this is the era where the Rumble surpassed SummerSlam as the number two pay-per-view. Funny, because when we eventually do wrap this thing up, I wonder if that's changing again. I think it is.
Okay.
But different podcast
yeah.
for a different day.
I think so, yeah.
But, you know, we talked about some of our disagreements on 98 and 99 here a minute ago. I think we're going to have some agreement here because, to me, it's justified the buy rates here. This is the
right.
peak era of not necessarily the Rumble match, but I think of the Rumbles as a pay-per-view.
Right.
I mean, the Rumbles generally are all pretty good here, but the pay-per-views are all really solid shows. The company was doing great.
Right.
So I sense that this will be more of a hunky-dory mini-episode.
I think
here
so.
Moving forward.
And along those lines, we're at the point now of the consolidation of the boom. And as I said to you off air, I kind of make a comparison in my mind between, not necessarily quality of years or whatever, but just in terms of what they represented. 99 and 77, or I'm sorry, 87. Those were the points of demarcation, I think, part one and part two of the respective booms in terms of guys coming in. 87 was a year of you got DiBiase coming in, you got Duggan coming in, you got some of the other
Warrior,
the new wave guys that were going to help define the second half of the boom. And in 99, you had Jericho coming in. You got Show coming in. Not long after this pay-per-view, you got the Radicals coming in. So the people that would help define the second half of the boom were coming in at that point.
And you and I talked a little bit off-air. Although you can certainly argue that a lot of those guys who came in for the second half of the boom were not booked to the best of their potential.
That's right.
You can argue that. And I'll listen to that argument. I'm sure you're going to make it a bunch of times.
Yeah.
I'll still take a lot of these guys booked not fully to their potential over the guys, the mid-card fodder we had in 98 and 99. I think that may be the one disconnect you and I have
This. I don't deny that.
Because the thing I thought about this as I was watching these shows, it's like, yeah, you can do this nitpicky stuff, and a lot of it isn't just nitpicking, it's valid.
Right.
During 2000 to 2002 and certainly beyond.
Right.
But I still think... I almost became dyslexic there for a minute. This cream soda is unbelievable, by the way.
Oh, glad you like. Gluten-free.
Yes. How interesting. That, you know, Jericho not booked to the best of his abilities, Benoit not booked to the best of his abilities, and so on and so forth. I still will take those guys over the mid-card we had in 98, 99, which were unique years because it's particularly 98.
I won't deny 98,
that. 98 WWF was so unique in that it was probably one of the few times in company history that they booked to the most potential they had. They
right.
got the most out of everybody during that year.
Yeah.
And so I think that's why that's fondly remembered. And while they might not have done that with some of the crop that we're going to talk about here, I still think it was a better this is obviously with the benefit of hindsight. These were better shows
than
what we saw. For instance, we're going to start with 2000, obviously.
Right.
That's a better show than not just the 98 and 99 Rumble. It's a better show than any pay-per-view in 1998 or 1999.
Well, where 98 stands out in the history of the company in a lot of ways.
Well, it's when it overtook WCW.
Well, it's one of the things, but in terms of what it means and what it could mean subsequently in the business if applied, you and I are always saying, push a bunch of the new guys at once, whatever. Maybe the greatest examples in the history of wrestling are World Class 82, 83, and 1998 WWF as far as reestablishing the top of the mid-card with really hot guys up there. The other thing is, too, such an experimental year. You talk about how many guys were over in 98. It's because they rolled the dice way more than they ever have before or since on most of them.
Well, what's interesting in retrospect of 98 is I don't know there were a ton of guys that were over. I think you just had a couple guys. Obviously, Austin, and then Rock by the end of the year.
But the product was so over, though. The product was... It didn't matter. It's like, you're a guy in this hot era of wrestling.
Yes. Yes, I agree. Yeah, you're right. The product was over.
It was.
And there were some metrics that indicated that wrestling was more popular in those 2 years, but...
Buy rates, attendance, ratings,
Buy rates, no. The TV-wise, I think with the general public, it might have been more over, because it was newer. At the time, because pro wrestling's cool again.
Right.
There was that, but business was much better in 2000 through 2002.
Oh, it absolutely was. 2000 was the best year in the history of the company.
They grew what was their audience to its peak level, obviously. You know, you can argue things probably peaked in WrestleMania 17. But anyway, let's get into this, shall we?
Well, exactly.
Did you have another point to make?
Only thing I was going to say about 2000 is, again, perfect example. He's not in the Rumble, but he's coming in right after this. Like, I do agree with you as far as depth in 2000 versus in 98. Like, I love Perry Saturn. I hate to see him having to be slumming. But give me slumming Perry Saturn over a lot of the guys from 98. That's where I agree with you. That's a perfect example.
So we're
going to
talk
right
about
there.
That. And that's, I guess, something that kind of plays in to my first point, my first of the 3 points about that the Monday Night War is over. You see a lot of the guys jumping ship from WCW to WWF during this period. And, you know, that was obviously, you know, one of the biggest factors, and it was not the biggest, but one of the biggest in kind of, you know, WCW's demise. But anyway, let's go to 2000, shall we? The 2000 Rumble. So this is generally regarded as one of the better shows in company history.
Yep.
I remember
justifiably
at the time people couldn't, the show that people had to go back to that was maybe better than this was Canadian Stampede in the summer of 97. And that's interesting because that's a show that, unless if you were kind of around then, like you don't remember, it's obviously a very little historical importance.
Right.
So.
And by and large, a one match show. It's just that one match was so off
the
hook.
Yes, yes. This is arguably, to this day, top to bottom, the best Rumble pay-per-view. Now, I'm going to make a case that 01's neck and neck with it, actually,
okay,
in retrospect. But certainly this is a show that drew universal praise. It kicked off an incredible 7-month run for the company of paper on pay-per-view. Ironically, one of the two duds was WrestleMania.
Right.
King of the Ring being the other. So let's get into this.
Yep.
We talk about new people, new names. Let's just start with this. You know, the other ones we kind of jump around. This one I just want to go straight through.
Absolutely.
Okay. I guess I should have told you that before.
Okay.
Show openers, Taz against Kurt Angle, two names that we have not talked about yet.
Mm-hmm.
Kurt Angle debuted Survivor Series 99, right?
Yeah.
And he did his little undefeated streak.
It's one of the most compressed undefeated streaks that ever meant anything, because it's only a couple of months, but by the time of the Rumble, it was like, hey, who's going to beat this guy?
It was only like, yeah, it was only like, what, 2 months? Yeah. And it was funny, but you know, you didn't bring this up. You said you were going to.
Okay.
So I'll bring it up for
all
you.
All right.
They had SmackDown at this point we should bring up.
This is the first one of the Raw and SmackDown era, yes.
Yeah, now
pre-brand
it was not
split.
That's going to be a different part.
Right.
We'll talk, you know, when we talk about the split era. But, you know, there is SmackDown. So there was more exposure on TV. And I can't, to be honest with you, I can't remember how much Angle was on Raw. We didn't actually get SmackDown at OU, so I never watched it.
Okay.
But,
Oh, you mean WOUB didn't carry it?
No, we didn't have it at all.
Inside joke, okay, folks.
Yeah. So, anyway, Kurt Angle, and he was not even close yet to what he would become, Kurt Angle.
Right.
But you could see that this guy was going to get over.
Yep.
Taz, one of your favorites from ECW. His time, this was kind of that period where a lot of the longtime ECW guys had sort of, you know, done it all there, and we're going to move on.
Right.
And for Taz, and I don't want to make any height jokes, but I will, this is clearly his high point in WWF.
It is.
And I know you're going to come back here and say, they should have done so much more with him, and you're going to probably raise some good points, but what happens, he comes in as a surprise. They had done those, like, 13 things on TV, remember?
Right.
And it wasn't a big secret. I think I remember at the time I knew it was going to be Taz.
Mm-hmm.
But debuting him in MSG,
you
know, New York, obviously a big ECW stronghold, was the right place, the right time, and this was an excellent debut for Taz. Unfortunately for him, it was all pretty much downhill from here.
It was.
But he snaps Angle's win streak. And
very quickly,
looks really
too.
Good in the press. Yeah, this was a squash. This was a squash.
Right.
An extended squash.
Ironically, much along the lines of what he was doing in ECW. And again, you know, I'm not going to belabor the point, but look, I mean, how you don't get at least one Taz Undertaker WrestleMania out of his run, you know, I don't know.
Okay, all right, now I'm jumping in.
Okay.
Now, I know you've already said, I thought you were joking when you told me that. The one time.
What?
You're serious?
I am serious.
Dude.
I am serious. Look at how much heat he brought in with him and how much he carried
again,
came out of this match
again,
with.
See, this is when I can spell because it's WWE understanding. This was a perfect time to debut Taz. You have to remember, every place they go to isn't New York.
Right.
So I'm going to talk to us about Taz. Did Taz deserve better than what he got?
Sure.
Yes. I agree.
There was money in him.
That's what we're going to say. I don't think... And again, pardon these short jokes, his ceiling was quite as high as you think. I think, as I looked at how 2000 unfolded, remember when, like, Val Venus got that inexplicable Intercontinental title run in the summer? Like, you're like, as a heel, and you're like, why?
Right.
Like, he wasn't really over as a heel. Like, with Val Venus, he was one of those guys people wanted to see him do the Hey Ladies thing.
Right.
Tell the terrible joke and wrestle for 5 minutes and be done with it.
Right.
No one wanted to see him as a heel Intercontinental champion.
I
Although he was an
that.
Okay worker, but no one wanted to see it. It was
right.
just bland. I thought Taz could have been the Intercontinental, like, because remember he even was feuding with Rikishi?
Mm-hmm.
I thought he could have been the guy to beat Rikishi and then be the bridge between Rikishi and Guerrero.
Yeah.
I gotta be honest with you, though. I never saw Taz as higher than the Intercontinental title in WWE.
Okay.
I just didn't. And there were a couple things. Some were out of his control.
I'm not saying he should have gotten a world title run.
Taz versus The Undertaker's preposterous. Here's the thing.
Why?
The way you want Taz booked is like an ideal way for anybody. And in ECW, when they didn't actually have a lot of guys who could be effective doing that,
right.
It's fine. But WWE, there's a million guys who could do that same gimmick. And that
do it as well?
Yes. Well, here's the problem. He had a lot of... He came in the middle of a mass talent influx.
Right.
Where a lot of the guys, I'm sorry, are just better than Taz. Jericho's better than Taz. Benoit's better than Taz. Guerrero's better than Taz.
Yeah.
And he kind of got lost in the shuffle. So this was well after Jericho. And this is right before. Didn't the Radicals like debut the next night? Or was it like the week after this
show? I think it was
the
week after.
Okay.
But close.
So he got really lost in the shuffle right away. And they did do him no favors by slotting him into like the hardcore
and almost
division.
Having the announcers refer to him as being short. Why do you go out of your way to do that?
That I don't understand. That's
the opposite of money.
You're right. That's dumb. And, you know, he got hurt, which did obviously make him get hurt. I mean, can't work.
By the way, speaking of getting hurt, there's something about this match, too. I have an eye for, you know, in terms of going through this here, a lot of things that you wouldn't see or hear today. A lot of times, justifiably so. They made light out of Kurt Angle in the middle of the match. It was supposedly like he might have a concussion. You'll never hear that today.
It's funny you bring that up. 2001, I actually have that as a big,
big
note in 2001 because they'd make an even bigger deal about it with the Dudleys.
Okay.
But, so, back to Taz.
Yeah.
As I regain my train of thought. Slotting on the hardcore division, because that was a jobber division.
Right.
By the time he got hurt. He just wasn't as good as some of the other guys coming in. And then by the time, and I'll say this, I was irritated about this time. The whole thing with Jerry Lawler, where he winds up jobbing to him.
Right. No sense.
I mean, that was the end. I thought, had they done that with, again, had he been the Intercontinental Champion, had he bullied China and Guerrero, who was with China at the time, kind of maybe like was the, you know, hero for the damsel in distress or whatever, that would have been more effective than working with frickin' Jerry Lawler. Like, Taz should realistically have squashed Jerry Lawler in 15 seconds.
I agree with that.
So once he lost at that SummerSlam.
ECW Taz would have.
Well, they didn't. I don't know. I don't know what. They didn't see a lot of him. Again, I don't think his height. I mean, the idea that he would work with The Undertaker is so preposterous. But.
Well, not with the announcers undermining him by making height references all the time.
I don't think. Honestly.
Monster versus monster if you do it right. I'm telling you.
You're insane.
Have you watched any ECW?
It's ECW. You have to understand there are people that don't watch ECW. There are people who may have been at MSG that day who didn't know who Taz was.
Okay.
There are people who were watching the pay-per-view who didn't know who he was.
What if he had like a 68-match win streak of just choking guys out left
who
and right?
Who the hell's not going to get over? You're basically just like, I like this guy and I want him to win all the time. Anyone gets over by doing a 68-match win streak.
Why not try what worked successfully on a smaller stage?
I don't think it would have gotten over like you think at this stage. It worked because he was that guy in ECW. There were a million other guys.
He wasn't going to draw honky-tonk man heat by having that happen. The crowd wasn't going to turn on him for getting a big, you know.
No, but I just don't think it would have been as effective. I don't know if the crowd would have bought it. The height was kind of an issue when he went to WWE. It was. I mean, he looked small when he came in. I mean, again, you shouldn't have pointed that out.
Right.
It doesn't do anyone any
favors. Oh, that's what I'm saying. They did it all the time.
But, and again, he got hurt quickly. So anyway.
Political to do that, too.
I just. And by the way, Kurt Angle here does a quickie job.
Yep.
He wound up still being over.
Yeah.
So I don't want to hear about Taz and all these liberal excuses. Because Kurt Angle, by the way, does a mega job here and winds up being world champion.
Well, he proclaims that it was a fluke, that how it happened, and a chokehold.
Now we're going kayfabe.
It put heat on a rematch. It did.
Which they never did.
Yeah, where was the rematch?
Or maybe they did, and it was like on Raw or SmackDown.
Yeah, exactly.
But I can't remember a rematch. It certainly wasn't at the next pay-per-view. Anyway.
Right.
So I thought this was effective, though, the Taz Angle match. Good opener.
It was
a good way to open a show. Hardy's Dudleys. Also good. This is unique. Something you don't see a lot on Raw today in 2015. All parties getting over in a match.
Right.
Which is what this was designed to do. This was the very first tables match.
Right.
In case if you forgot. And the gimmick was not tired nor cliche at this point. It was actually quite interesting. And this was the night before Bubba put Terry through the table.
Right.
Right.
But it was this odd alignment. Like, Terry's out there as a babyface with the Hardys.
Well, remember,
she didn't work babyface very much.
Remember, they won the Terry Invitational Tournament, TIT,
that's
for
right.
short. in the And that was weird. It was pretty short. It went, because we were at that show.
Or right.
You were at the show, right?
Right.
We weren't there together. October 99. When the
wasn't there, no.
Oh.
I watched, I think I might have seen it on pay-per-view. I'm not sure.
Okay. Well, in October 99 here in Cleveland, Hardys beat Edge and Christian in a ladder match.
Right.
That match is better than this one.
Right.
But it's similar in that both teams got over it. Sort of like, so the Hardys go over both times.
Right.
But the other team got over losing because it became, you know, there's that stunt show factor
right.
here. And obviously this builds into the first ever tables, ladders, and chairs.
Right.
Or, although it was just called tables and ladders match. WrestleMania of this year.
That's
it was
right.
Not a, it was officially not a TLC match.
Okay.
But, you know, the three teams getting themselves over. I enjoyed this match. You know, again, a tables match now, even though
sure.
I have a pay-per-view built around those kind of matches, they're not as good. But this one was good. I gave this is like a three-and-a-quarter-star match.
This, and I agree with that.
Maybe that's even 3.5.
That's about where I'd slot it. But it's very, very interesting, too, because of the upping the ante that we would see and have seen subsequently in years to come.
It was
it's
new.
Kind of like, well,
here it was
you,
new.
You
like,
and I had
like
talked about this
matches,
before we did our WrestleMania
matches.
Thing here. Yeah. Shawn Razor, if you want to give that thing 5 stars or close to it, you got to have your 1994 goggles strapped on pretty firmly. And I kind of have a harder time doing that than some people do. Because I just
that's interesting because off-air you accused me of having 2015 goggles on. So which is it, Rick?
Situationally.
Morris?
You
oh,
situationally
yes.
Switch your goggles here.
Yes.
But I agree with you. This was a very good match, and it was worth seeing.
It was good. And by the way, you know, I know Vince always likes to point this out on those easy. Well, the Dudleys got over, and they were one of our teams. So it wasn't just like they did give the Dudleys. It was interesting because they had kind of not done much with them initially.
Right.
This was, like, their kind of big breakthrough.
That's another big part of the influx, because they were a cornerstone of ECW that came over in late 99. Mm-hmm. So this
and they didn't, remember they were just, like, doing that, Bubba was doing that stuttering gimmick?
Right.
And this was
they
kind
reverted.
Of,
yeah.
This, I think, was the end of that.
Exactly.
If I remember, that they went to him powerbombing women through tables, something you wouldn't see today. But
well, and that, again, this being like such a weird era, eventually, I mean,
it got him over his faces by putting women through tables.
Mae Young, that made him some of the biggest faces in the company.
Speaking
so,
of,
the normal rule book goes out the window.
Speaking
is this,
of,
is this the show? That's right. Miss Wrestle or Miss Royal Rumble? That's right.
The less said about seeing, you know, we bitch a lot about the PG era, but one of the positives of it is that we will not see a 70-year-old woman's tits on pay-per-view.
They were gimmicked. They were doing the whole something about Mary thing. I thought it was funny. They were heavily gimmicked.
It was amusing at the time, I guess.
Right.
It was like, but the less said about this, the better.
I thought it was really funny. I laughed my ass off.
Oh, okay.
I did. You know, it's different strokes for different folks, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, something that I think you and I can agree on here.
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of as we kind of trend downwards. We've got a lot of positive things to say about this 2000 Rumble.
We're about to hit the nadir with a few matches.
Yes. So we have this Intercontinental title situation
mm-hmm.
with Chris Jericho, China, and Bob Holly.
Yeah.
For those who forgot, this was the hideous co-Intercontinental Champion era, which lasted like a few weeks,
right?
Only, thankfully, where Jericho and China were both the Intercontinental Champion. They did like a double pin thing,
mm-hmm.
and they were like, "Well, you guys are both the champions now," which was like so high rolling.
Right.
Really, I remember at this time I was a little irritated with the treatment of Jericho.
Mm-hmm.
I think we'll talk a little bit more about that when we get to Triple H, his match. But he was not, after coming in in incredible fashion.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what a debut that
right.
was in Chicago that night where he faced off with The Rock. He did that, and then, like, there was no real follow-up on it.
Right.
And then I remember, you know, he wasn't even on that No Mercy pay-per-view in 99. And he then starts working with China.
Yep.
Because remember, China wins the Intercontinental from the departing Jeff Jarrett.
Mm-hmm.
And Jericho comes out, and you're like, oh, good, thank God, he's just going to beat Chyna, he's going to embarrass her, right. great. And then they have him lose to her at Survivor Series.
Right.
I got a problem with that. That's embarrassing. Right. Like, I know that Chyna at one point was kind of over, but that's terrible.
Right.
And you talk about politics at the time, you know, sure. That was an issue. He then finally beats her the mm-hmm. next month, and then they do this double pin thing on TV. Bob Holly, I don't even remember how he worked his way into this. I think there was a TV match where one of them defended against Bob Holly, the other one interfered, and they just wound up doing this three-way.
Anytime you can say even Bob Holly deserved better booking, that tells you all you need to know.
In my notes here, I just have, this was so beneath Jericho. This is a match that I don't really even enjoy watching, even as good as Jericho was at the time.
Right.
Because you're just glad they didn't do anything really dumb. Like, mm-hmm. when he goes over, it's almost a relief. It's not enjoyable. It's like, oh, thank God, he's the undisputed intercontinental. He can move on from this hideous thing with Chyna and start working with talented people, which he did the rest of the year. It was fine. I think a case could have been made, and again, we'll talk about this a little bit later on with Triple H, that he could have been the lead heel in the company at this point,
mm-hmm.
given how he got himself so over in one night, a lot more over than Triple H did in one night for most of 99. But it was sort of just a relief to me that Jericho goes over here than anything else. It's not really a very good match at all. Bob Holly, this just in, wasn't over. Never was as a singles guy. Chyna, I was so anti-Chyna at this point, I remember.
I don't blame you. But this match, as well as some other ones on the card here, something I have in my notes, this was the first year where matches would be promoted through the show with, let's just call it, Raw-style vignettes. 2000 marks the beginning of it being closer to a Monday Night Raw in terms of the presentation of it.
Ah, yes. Okay.
Yeah. So there's that.
Well, it's good, too, especially now, because a lot of times when we go back and watch these, it's funny, I can remember anything. I don't need the video packages in the 90s because I can remember that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Here it's like, oh, God, how did this happen again? Because there's so much TV and stuff. So
that's right.
It actually comes in handy. But
and they actually let off the show, by the way, with and we'll get to this match a little later on, Triple H Cactus Jack video package that was really, really good in terms of getting that feud across, the entirety of it, the history of it. So the production was starting to change a little bit with the 2000 Rumble show.
Yes, and I'm sure Kevin Dunn loves that you're saying this.
Yeah. Here's the thing. It was great in 2000, but Kevin Dunn, 15 years later, almost 16 now, to be doing the same thing. Wow. What a one-trick pony.
I actually thought that with less bells and whistles, that's a term, by the way, that I'm going to overuse, I think, during this podcast. Mm-hmm. Might be a crutch phrase.
Okay.
You know, I think they overproduce a lot of those video packages.
I think so, too.
Now, they were more effective during this time period. Of course, it also helps when you're promoting better stuff.
That's right.
NAO, New Age Outlaws, that is. I guess the Acolytes was your tag title match on this show.
Yep.
Still, you know, kind of like all the previous Rumbles in the 90s, where all the titles are being defended here on the undercard. This wound up being kind of a blink and you'll miss it affair. They must have been going long.
Crash TV, 2:39 here.
Well, they must have been going long on time, is what I'm assuming. They had to save the time for both the Rumble and the World title match.
Taz Angle, 3:15, 10:18 for Hardy's Dudley, 7:31 for the Triple Threat. What was eating up the time? Maybe the vignettes.
Yeah,
maybe
and your girl Mae Young Miss showing Rumble. Her tatas, okay?
By the way.
Is there something, I don't know, was there something else I forgot?
Well, they had new introductions for the judges here for that. Sergeant Slaughter, Tony Gurria, Fabulous Moolah, Johnny Valiant, past lounge guest, Freddie Blassie. This might have been his last time before a live crowd. They were the judges, and of course, the King made a fool out of himself in the segment, as per usual.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know the way.
So it's probably the non-wrestling that forced this one to go short, I'm thinking.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, this is a company who, in a four-hour WrestleMania, can only do eight matches. So,
yep.
This winds up being a blink and you'll miss it affair, like I said. I don't have a problem with that, because I know that, I remember at the time, like, the Acolytes were kind of getting over his faces, and people wanted more out of this, and this did receive a fair share of promotion going in, but it's also right before the Acolytes kind of morphed into the APA, which was a better use of them anyway than serious tag title contenders. And the New Age Outlaws, who were kind of at 1459 at that point of their relevancy.
Right. Because
they wind up jobbing a month later to a better team anyway in the Dudleys.
Right.
So the fact that this is short has really no bearing on my enjoyment of the show.
Right.
To be honest with you, it's not like they were going to give you a good match anyway.
These four guys together, the chemistry's just not there.
Yeah, I mean, it comes across as, you're right, crash TV,
yep.
the term at the time, but